The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decisions. Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. Helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor, and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
Welcome back to Your Life, Your Wealth. I'm Steve Cordasco. We have a great show planned for you today. Here's what's affecting your life and your wealth. Today, we'll spend some time talking about entrepreneurs. I'll be joined by Catherine Fazio and Jorge Guzman of MIT to talk about what makes great entrepreneurs and the importance of small business. I'll also discuss why lower attendance at Donald Trump's inauguration is exactly why he was elected. But let's begin. We're going to jump into the first 100 days of a presidency. And of course, we're going to navigate it into President Trump. But I'm bringing it up because this past weekend, the Wall Street Journal showcased the topic of the first 100 days of a president. And they had Franklin Roosevelt, who I guess was the one who really kind of broadcasted the first 100 days. And you wonder why the first 100 days is so important and where does that come from? And isn't the whole presidency important? Well, the first 100 days is when you start to put your initiatives all together. You list them out, you organize what you want to do, and you announce them so that you can be held accountable and we as a country can understand where we're going. Vince and I, my producer, were also talking and he brought up a point. He says, you know, when there's a stat out there or there's a piece of study out there that shows when hiring a manager at a company, that new hire is most valuable in the first 30 days. And I said, wow, interesting. Why is that? And Vince, you jump on here. Tell me.
Well, yeah, it's the idea of being on the outside. When you start in a new company, you're learning all of these new things. Here's how we do this process. Here's how we do that process. If you have a problem, you're going to talk to this supervisor, that supervisor. And basically, you don't have a routine established. So as you're learning all these new things, you're questioning the processes. Is it logical for me to talk to this supervisor instead of that one? Or is it logical for me to log things a certain way instead of another? And you might have experiences from your previous work experience that could be applied. You know, it's sharing information. It's trading ideas. And so before you get stuck into that routine and get adjusted to that routine, you still have the questioning mind, and that's when you can be the most valuable.
Yeah, interesting. And I'll pull you back because I want to kind of now take that to another step. But what I want to do is I want to talk about the first 100 days. And Trump is coming in and making a lot of noise because he's being pretty bold in his initiatives. And I want to tie it to why this time right now, the headline news of the first 100 days of Trump, we're going to keep hearing about and hearing about it, but I want to pull it to why it's relevant to you, your life, and your wealth. Here's where the relevance comes in. It's the first 100 days that blueprint of the path that the president is going to take, that Trump is going to take. It organizes an agenda and puts action to it. It's organization and action. And that resonates with me. Why does it resonate with me? Because when you go to Cordasco Financial Network, we have three pillars that we follow. One's planning, one's investment solutions. The other is executing, coaching, helping you through it, making it happen. Those are the three key pieces to successful planning. The first 100 days of President Trump's administration, he's showcased his plan, and he says, I'm going to be held accountable for my plan. So he's organized what he wants to accomplish. Next, he's built his team, because it's going to take a team to accomplish it, to help it get accomplished. To help execute it. And then part of it is going to have a return in the form of investment. Part of what he's doing is making a major investment. And the return on that investment is a better life and a stronger country. He has his three pillars. So let's run down it. Day one, he wants to repeal Obamacare. Next, he wants to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Next, he wants to remove energy regulations on shale, clean coal, create jobs in turn. See, that's the return on the investment in this thing. Pass the American Energy and Infrastructure Act, where $1 trillion into a 10-year investment. He wants to sign an executive order on border security day one. Those are his agendas. That's what he wants to accomplish. That's where he wants to go. Those are agendas that resonated in helping him get elected. So how does this apply to you? And what I try to tell folks who when we're looking at all these big pictures, I mean, we're going to sit there in our own daily lives. We're going to sit in our Barca lounger. We're going to be watching TV. We're going to be listening to the news outlets. And all this stuff's going to be coming to us, right? We're going to hear all this stuff, and we can comment on whether he did a good job or didn't do a good job. But you got to apply it now to you. And there's something to learn here from it. Because when I was looking at the Wall Street Journal, and there was a picture of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and they were showcasing the first 100 days, and my kids were giving me a history lesson on that president, and now wanting to know what the 100 days was, kind of makes you start to think, well, is the first 100 days important for our country? Because ultimately, if it makes our country, brings our country to a better place, then that means it's good for me. But shouldn't we have for ourselves, now that we're in the beginning of the year, it's almost like New Year's resolutions, shouldn't you have for yourself your own 100 days of what you want to accomplish? A lot of this is organizing. This was organized. These goals that Trump wants to accomplish were organized. It was organized in a manner of what is important to the people and what can get me elected. For you, it's the same. What's important to you? And maybe not just you, but how about your spouse? And how about your family members? What's important to you so that you can live a better life and have a stronger foundation? Because that's the goal for Trump. Wants us to be in a better place, live a better life, and to make America great again, which is have a stronger foundation, which was being frayed in the minds of enough voters to get him elected. So they've been organized. You need to do the same. When it comes to planning, you need to plan the same way. Put down what is going to help you lead and live a better life. What do you need today? Day one. And then what do you need down the road? Because not all of this is getting done on day one. There's going to be a big fight to get it all done. And as all that fighting goes on, you need to look at it the same way that you just don't put something down in your financial plan and expect it to get done. It's a challenge. It's tough to do. There's debate that goes on. I had somebody not long ago who thought the dream of retirement, at least his dream of retirement, was to golf in Florida and spend time living a good life in a warmer climate. He was baffled that that's not what his wife wanted. But they both wanted to live a fulfilling retirement. In his mind, that's what is fulfilling. Their last financial advisor never asked what was fulfilling to her. What's fulfilling to her is the grandkids. And moving to Florida puts them far away from the grandkids. So now what do you do? Does he have to change? Does she have to change? You come up with a solution. But guess what? It takes a team to do it. That's the other thing he's putting together. He's putting the team together to help execute these things. But you need to know the type of team you want in place. And the team helps you get it done. There's no doubt that signing an executive order for border security is not going to include Homeland Security, who is a member of your team. There's no doubt that repealing Obamacare is going to involve other members of your cabinet, as well as those that are on your side in Congress and part of government. So a team's important. So I want you to think about that. Think about where you are today. And so, Vince, to go back to what we're talking about here, and I'm bringing it into financial planning for 2017, organization and action are important.
Absolutely, yeah. It's when you look at everything that Trump's done here with all the different plans that he wants to do in his first 100 days, the other thing that strikes me about it is the fact that he's covering so many different elements. It's comprehensive. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very extensive. Because he's looking at healthcare, but he's also looking at foreign trade. He's looking at local energy, internal domestic energy. He's looking at infrastructure. So it's abroad. It's personal. Mm-hmm. It's international. He's interested in every aspect, and at least he's thinking and planning and acting with core beliefs on those principles.
It's a huge agenda. I haven't seen a president with this type of an agenda in a long time, and it is going to come down to having a good partnership with those around you. And I think I'm trying again to tie this to each and every one of us and what you need to do. And, you know, this is a plan. And the plan has a timeline on it. And this plan will not always go as planned. There's going to be adversities that come into play. But if you have the right teammates on board, you can work through those surprises, those shifts, things that happen that can derail a plan. So the takeaway from this, president's coming in for our country with a plan. You need to have a plan as well. Know where you are today and where you want to be tomorrow and into the future. Map it out. See what it looks like. Organize. To get it to happen, it's got to be organized. And it begins with not just your thoughts and your goals being organized, but then all the pieces of it being organized. Where is your stuff today? Can you see all the detail pieces that go into it? Right, there's a lot of detail in repealing Obamacare. There's pieces you're going to want to keep, pieces you don't want to keep. But it needs to be organized. Same with you. You might have insurance. Some insurance you might want to keep, some you don't. needs to be looked at. He will have partners looking at that. That's his team. It'll be fascinating. It's a lot to do. We're going to have a lot to talk about, but I want to bring it back to you. No reason why. You can sit down and just watch the show go on out there and everybody in fight over what his goals are to bring our country to be great again. But I also want you to think about yourself, because I think we all can use this as an experience, at least here in the new year, to develop a plan that's organized, thought out, that has action steps to it, and partners, a team that can help you execute it, whether it's a certified financial planner, lawyers, accountants, insurance folks, everyone, inclusively, working on your behalf so that you can achieve your goal to the end result of living a better life. I'm Steve Cardasco. Love your comments. You can email me, send me emails, info@cfnplan.com. That's info@cfnplan.com. And please, we're growing on Facebook. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/cfnplan. I appreciate your input. Love to hear more about your comments on the first 100 days of President Trump. Coming up next, I'll be joined by Catherine Fazio and Jorge Guzman of MIT to talk about what makes a great entrepreneur and the importance of small business.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here. Do you have a sound retirement strategy? Have you taken the time to sit down and write a plan for achieving your retirement dream? Sadly, most of us spend more time planning our vacations than our own financial future. I'm here to tell the Delaware Valley a name that most people probably already know. Steve Cardasco. You've been listening to Steve for the last 25 years. You've been reading his articles in the Philadelphia Business Journal, Forbes, TheStreet.com. Steve Cardasco and his team have just come out with a new guide for retirement planning called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's cfnplan.com. The guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, generating cash flow in retirement, tax saving strategies, ways to reduce stock market stress, investment solutions that match your risk, how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement, much, much more. And now for my Hugh Hewitt listeners, I strongly recommend you get a copy of Steve Cardasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go now to cfnplan.com.
And welcome back to Your Life, Your Wealth. I'm Steve Cardasco. I'm very excited, as you know, to talk about business owners, and the life of entrepreneurship here in our country. Over the years, I have made a fair amount of noise over my defending of the small business owner. And I haven't been all that excited with this past administration in that I believe the small business owner has been left behind. I don't think there's a voice in Washington. I don't know why that is. I keep searching for that. But it seems like everybody who seems to take over the White House either wants to bring big Wall Street in or big business in, and maybe they're the ones that can afford $500 to $1 million for speeches after the president's out of office. And I'm blaming all past administrations on this front. So as you know, I donate time to that space. And joining me now is Catherine Fazio and Jorge Guzman of MIT. They have some new work that I want to bring to your attention. It's a new view of the SKU, a quantitative assessment of the quality of American entrepreneurship. Catherine, Jorge, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Thank you.
Yep. So happy you're joining us. Just how important is entrepreneurship for success in today's American economy?
I think this is Kathy talking, and thanks for that great introduction. I wanted to state that I'm part of a new lab here at MIT for innovation, science, and policy. We think entrepreneurship is very important for the economy, and that it's an engine for growth. Which is helpful in creating jobs and opportunities.
So based on the work, I assume you get grants and dollars to study this?
Yep, we do. We apply for We applied for grants and also get supported by MIT.
Okay, so knowing that, obviously, I believe it's important, and maybe, you know, some folks that aren't, you know, so tied to it might want to know why it's important. So but I want to first get into what your science is all about right now. This particular piece, what is it? Where does it take us? And kind of, if you could summarize it so that people can understand the academia that goes into this particular science and what this science means to the average everyday person.
Great. Jorge, did you want to take a first crack at that one?
Sure. So, I mean, this paper titled A New View of This Cue really tries to get to beyond the number of firms, to try to look at the differences between firms that are more likely to create economic growth and less likely to create economic growth. Now, Steve, you mentioned there are many good things about entrepreneurship, and you know, we like all of them. This paper just focuses on one, which is its ability to increase economic growth and GDP and its connection between firms and sort of that ability. And through some predictive algorithms where we look at all firms across 15 U.S. states and we're able to assess their potential at the time they're born, we're able to show that it's not only the number of firms that changes through time, but also the quality of these firms in terms of their potential to grow. And we end up with multiple interesting findings from there. One of them is that, you know, there's been a nuanced pattern that has sort of changed across different economic conditions. And our index right now goes all the way up to 2014, and we see a lot of growth on the quality-adjusted entrepreneurship in the United States after the big recession of 2009. We see a big, very nice uptake. In fact, you know, levels that didn't increase as fast, but the level itself got pretty high and almost as high as the dot-com bubble in the year of 2014. So the production of entrepreneurship, we find it's actually very good. Where we find less success in the United States is in the ability of these entrepreneurs to scale. So we find the entrepreneurs when you look at...
Well, hold on. I don't mean to interrupt. But so when you say scale, let's break that down. That means they're struggling with growth.
Yes. So in our case, you know, the way we look at this, again, we're really looking at the cost of entrepreneurship related to economic growth, and we're really trying to look at high growth entrepreneurship, right? So firms that have potential to IPO, to be sort of lead to a big acquisition, that kind of thing. And what we see is that for similar sort of potential firms, according to our measurements, they used to be able to on average achieve those outcomes more often in the past than they're doing after, you know, over the last sort of decade and a half.
Yep. So let me break this down. So what I'm at least seeing in engaging the public and you know, Steve's voice has been out there, and I've engaged with many, many business owners. I write for the Philadelphia Business Journal. Many of them engage back. They say it's more difficult today, they feel, than in the past. And this would come from the banking community, and that, you know, we're just not seeing people wanting to take the risk of starting a business. There seems to be less new businesses. So as I go back, and maybe I should come to MIT and look more at the work folks like you are doing, I go more to the street. So I'll go to Paychex and I'll talk to somebody there. And Paychex has actually said this has been the worst 10-year period that we've seen in our company, and that we're just not getting businesses starting up, coming in, growing. And they've been a fantastic company over the years. You know, one of the stellar companies, AAA rating for a long, long time. So something's happened out there. Can you support that at all, or am I wrong? Are you seeing a better picture than I'm seeing?
I think you are hitting on a number of dynamics in business and business dynamism that are very real, and have been picked up in measures of business formation, and kind of net measures of how many businesses are founded versus how many might die in a particular year. And so I think that there are academic measures that do pick up on the very dynamics that you're noticing and that you're hearing from Main Street. I think one of the things that this work helps us to do is get a new kind of window into the different types of businesses that are started, and start kind of looking separately at Main Street firms that are started versus high growth potential firms, an exciting potential application of this research is by enabling us to kind of understand what's happening at that more kind of detailed level, that we might be able to work with policymakers to better tailor small business support to what's needed in different communities. Jorge, would you say that's fair, and what do you have to add?
No, I completely agree. Yes, I completely agree.
So here's my question. Would you agree that small business has less of a voice in Washington, or does small business, does entrepreneurship, do they have a voice? Because I find I was offended when President Obama first took office, first term, and decided to invite Fortune 500 CEOs to the White House. My argument on radio was, what about the lifeblood, the heartbeat of America, which is a small business owner, right? Don't they employ more people than large businesses? Supposedly, that's the statistic, and our country's always been built on small business. So is there a voice there? And or are we just so busy as entrepreneurs on Main Street that we don't have time to find that road to togetherness to defend our cause of being the little guy?
So I certainly think that right now we're going through a lot of change in terms of the switch in administration, and it remains to be seen exactly how the voice of small business will be represented by this new administration. I think it's too early to tell.
Well, let's take a look back. Let's just, because I'm going to do a report card a little bit later in the show of because it's transition time in Washington. So you know, we like to hold people accountable here at our show, and so we're going to take a look at a Wall Street Journal piece of the Obama administration, how they did. You know, we had very low growth in the economy over 8 years. I think it actually was the lowest growth of any 8-year term president. But let's take a look back. So over the past 8 to 10 years, is it fair to say that it's been a more difficult environment for small business owners and not having a voice?
I think that's a two-part question. I think on the one hand, it's, you know, there's a point where it has been a tougher environment for small business owners. And on the other hand, we have the question whether the problem then is Washington and the fact that they didn't give business owners a voice to sort of solve that issue. And I do think it has been a tougher environment for business owners. I don't think extra focus on the Obama administration would have completely turned this around, at least, you know, in terms of at least giving as much focus as they gave to big businesses. So I'm not very sure about the causes yet. It's definitely something we're in the research community we're working on, but I I mean, I sometimes feel it's something deeper than focus in terms of the administration.
Hey, Kathy and Jorge, can you stick around? I need to take a quick break. And when I come back, I want to cover more on the fascinating topic of entrepreneurship. Keep it here on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. I'll be back in just a moment.
Hey, Rich Dooley here. My friend Steve Cordasco, financial advisor and founder of Cordasco Financial Network, is back with a new retirement guide called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. This guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, how to successfully generate cash flow in retirement, and how to utilize great tax savings strategies. This guide also uncovers the best practices to reduce stock market stress, how to find investment solutions that match your risk tolerance, and how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement. Whether you are taking the first steps to retirement planning and don't know where to start, are in pre-retirement and looking to accumulate wealth, or already retired and looking to preserve your wealth, you should get a copy of Steve Cordasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement, and it's totally free. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go right now to cfnplan.com.
Welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. As we go back to our conversation with Catherine Fazio and Jorge Guzman of MIT, we're talking entrepreneurship, where it is today, where it's going tomorrow. They did a new study on the SKU, a quantitative assessment of the quality of American entrepreneur. Is there a difference between an entrepreneur and a business owner? And I bring that up because today's American entrepreneur seems to have a different poster child than a business owner, right? A small business owner, you know, tends to be, you know, somebody on Main Street, you know, brick and mortar, maybe mom and pop shop, right? I think of just Hubbub, a coffee shop in the lobby of my, of the building I'm in. You know, a bunch of brothers who started this thing. And then I think of entrepreneurs as, you know, somebody who comes in with private equity money, Wall Street money, pools of dollars to take a business model. You know, they've pitched it and they have backing. And the whole goal is to flip it, right? To eventually kill it. And it becomes part of a bigger entity. Jorge, maybe you can start on that. Is there a differential there, or is the mom and pop still an entrepreneur?
You know, I think they are, and at the same time, I agree that there's a difference in poster childs on what these two groups that you identified are trying to do. Certainly there's. There's one that is trying to grow a company. Sometimes they want to sell it, as you said. Sometimes, but many times they actually want to IPO or have other sort of ways of paying back their investors. And in a way, sort of, it's usually younger than small business owners in terms of how young the firm is. But I, you know, so there's definitely two different kinds. And what we try to do is actually find a systematic way to differentiate between the two, sort of, you know, numerically, but it's definitely, you know, it's definitely two different kinds, and exactly how to make sure we serve each group successfully and well without confusing them or hoping policies for one group just help the other is actually, I think, something very important that is useful to continue to make progress on.
Do people, Catherine, like the profile of an entrepreneur? Because I do a lot. If you ever look at the website of Cordasco Financial Network, we help people with planning. And so right now I'm actually helping somebody with starting their own business and connecting them with small business lending organizations. And in the city of Philadelphia, they want startups, which we'll get to in a minute. And so I'm helping her navigate through that process, right? Then we also do investment solutions. And as I told this particular person, your investments outside of your business will go on hold because you need to put your resources into the business, right? Because that's what's going to probably give you your best return over time. And then we'll diversify once you get traction. And then the last thing we do is lifestyle coaching people, helping them through emotional and anxiety type of stuff, understanding who they are, showing them blind spots. And what I've learned in my schooling of helping people navigate who they are and trying to connect with them when they get so emotional about things, whether it's their family or their business, right? Or their money, right? These are all emotional trigger things. I've kind of schooled myself. So I found that entrepreneurs fall into one bucket. There's four types of people out there, according to psychology. The entrepreneur is a certain breed of person, and that particular entrepreneur only equals what 10% of the population is made up of DNA, right? So I don't know if I'm being clear on this, but you know, some people just like being a support person in an organization, right? Some people like being in sales, right? They don't want to go out and do their own. But then there's the entrepreneur who wants to be a risk taker, who wants to go out and do it and doesn't need anybody, wants to go take it on. Well, that as a population group only is 10% of the people out there, which I was fascinated to hear. So I fall in that group. Why do so many in that group get labeled as bad people? We have Steve Jobs, Jeff Bezos. These are hated people. Do you find that at all in the case when somebody is starting a business? Are they just aggressive people? Are they just people that are not like everybody else or not like 90% of the population? Therefore, like Donald Trump, you just don't like the guy?
Wow, a lot in that question.
Always is so, when you're talking to me. So welcome to the welcome to the
fantastic
show.
Well, okay. So I'm going to have to disagree with your premise that entrepreneurs are somehow hated or aggressive people that don't need anyone else. I can't agree with that generalization. Around MIT, there's certainly a lot of amazingly talented people that are trying to start a variety of businesses, and very often strengthen their chances by forming teams where different people on the team bring not only different skills, but a kind of array of perspectives so that they can end up with a stronger platform, a stronger product, really build on a vision and create something that hasn't been created before. Mm-hmm. Is entrepreneurship for everyone? Absolutely not. No, it's not. And I think that is also terrific, right? That hopefully people can go out and find what impassions them and make a life for themselves doing it, even though I agree with you that that can be a hard road, no matter what path you choose. So, I don't know if it answers your question.
No, it does.
But that's just kind of my perspective.
It absolutely does, because you said the key word, passion, right? It really starts with a passion. And sometimes a person with so much passion can be viewed as obnoxious or just different, you know, and it is what it is. I find the whole topic fascinating. I devote a good amount of time to what we do, to entrepreneurship. I do believe it's the lifeblood of our country, and I would like to see more businesses that begin actually stay in existence. It just seems as if we're, you know, there's too many big guys buying up the little guys to keep them out of the game. And I do believe, and this is one thing I don't care for, the direction that I'm starting to get a smell that Trump might be going is bringing deal makers in. Now, I know deal makers in the White House, a deal maker that's going to lead the SEC as opposed to somebody who's going to police Main Street mom and pop is a huge watershed moment and a big change than what we've faced the last 20 years. But I also know that when you do have mergers, acquisitions, and capital in motion, it does create wealth, and it does have an effect on the economy. So it'll be interesting to see where we go. I would just really like to see more businesses stay independent and not get gobbled up so quickly, but that's just me.
Well, I think with the kind of emergence of crowdfunding and crowdsourcing, we're seeing some exciting opportunities that may not have existed before for people to put their passion projects out there and get support for them. I think with different crowdfunding methods that are arising, you're seeing new channels of capital being developed so that local businesses might have new avenues to engage their customers and really build a community around their Main Street firms, which might be one avenue that is a way to achieve the vision that you just outlined. So, you know, keep your eye on that. We'll be interested to see you do some more shows on that.
Great. I would love to have you back. I appreciate the work you do. And the calls that you support. So keep up the good work, and I really appreciate your time. Ladies
Thanks
and gentlemen,
so
yep.
Thank you, Steve.
Yep, thank you for your time. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Catherine Fazio and Jorge Guzman of MIT, and we're talking about their new study on American entrepreneurship. Look, it's an economic read. It's not an easy one. I tried to break it down, and I think you got the thrust out of what's there. I think it's very important for our country going forward to keep the lifeline of business going. That's entrepreneurship, but it's also good for us to define what it is, entrepreneurship. And sometimes, you know, just the mom and pop shop opening up down the street with, you know, one employee doesn't get viewed as entrepreneurship. It gets viewed as a business owner, but that's what it is. I think Silicon Valley has changed that a bit with showcasing, you know, slick tech guys that, you know, like to call themselves entrepreneurs and, you know, have a lot of money behind them. Most entrepreneurs struggle to get funding, and not all are getting the big dollar pools. And I would believe, and I'm hoping on this, that as Donald Trump wants deal making done, he will also work on helping small business owners be able to manage in a much easier way. Maybe it's by reducing regulation. Maybe it's helping them get funding that otherwise they would get shut out of, just to be able to help their entities move forward. I'm Steve Cordesco. It's Your Life, Your Wealth Network. Please, if you're an entrepreneur, reach out. Love to hear from you. What do you think about the topic? You can email me, info@cfnplan.com, info@cfnplan.com. You can also follow me on Facebook. It's facebook.com/cfnplan. Back in a moment.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here. Do you have a sound retirement strategy? Have you taken the time to sit down and write a plan for achieving your retirement dream? Sadly, most of us spend more time planning our vacations than our own financial future. I'm here to tell the Delaware Valley a name that most people probably already know. Steve Cordasco. You've been listening to Steve for the last 25 years. You've been reading his articles in the Philadelphia Business Journal, Forbes, TheStreet.com. Steve Cordasco and his team have just come out with a new guide for retirement planning called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's cfnplan.com. The guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, generating cash flow in retirement, tax saving strategies, ways to reduce stock market stress, investment solutions that match your risk, how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement, much, much more. And now for my Hugh Hewitt listeners, I strongly recommend you get a copy of Steve Cordasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go now to cfnplan.com.
And welcome back to Your Life, Your Wealth. Thanks for being part of the show. As we wind down, I want to share a fun story with you. I get an email the other night, and it was exciting because it was from Donald J. Trump directly to me. Dear Steve. And I thought, oh, geez, this looks real. This doesn't look like some type of stage thing. Dear Steve, what? And I'm going to paraphrase as someone like yourself who, you know, how am I going to say this? It said something along the lines of, Dear Steve, based on your belief in making America great and your support of the cause, I would like you to attend the inauguration. We have tickets in your name. If you would like the tickets, please respond back. It's people like you that we would love to be able to share the experience of myself, and he mentioned Vice President Pence being sworn in Washington, D.C. Please let us know soon as demand for tickets are strong. So I thought to myself, I've been writing about Trump. I defended the tax thing that he was going through. I did not put money into Trump or back him financially, nor did I any candidate in this race. Maybe they've been paying attention to my Philadelphia Business Journal articles and stuff that I've been doing. I've been very challenging to him, meaning there's some stuff I just don't get why he does or what he does. You know, I haven't been 100% on board with him the whole time. But anyway, I get the invite. I got more fun out of showing my kids and different friends and stuff like that. So long story short, I'm not going. Now, many are baffled by that because my seats are up front and close. Not bad seats. Some said, geez, is he sending invites out to everyone and anybody because it's a light turnout? And then I started to really think of why am I not going? Which is very easy for me to answer. I want to go. I would love to witness it. Love to take one or two or three or four or maybe all five of the kids. I got to work. That's why I can't go. I'm working. Now, he sent me an invite for a celebration on Thursday night to come down and be part of a ball or something that's going on. And then stay over. And then Friday, experience the swearing in. I had a choice, tickets to the parade in a special area where I guess, you know, you're a little bit in better position, but I picked the swearing in. Last week I was going, the euphoria of it. And then I looked at my schedule. It would set me back. It really would. I just don't have time. I'm too busy. Which brings me to all the hoopla over President Obama having 2 million people and Trump supposedly having 700,000 or 800,000. And I thought, they're equating it on CNN as if, they just don't like this president. But frankly, those that did support the president and got him elected probably have something to do, like me. And that's work. Because you pay a lot of taxes. And you have things you got to get done. Helping others. I have an appointment that day during the swearing in with a client, and then a lunch with a client. I wasn't going to cancel that. My point is, I think a lot of people aren't going because they are like me. And they get up and they go to work. So I thought it was fun. I will get, I guess I'm getting a commemorative ticket because there's a ticket that they give you. And so that'll be a pretty neat thing to have. And the folks that are actually using my tickets are excited to be going because they do have time on their hands. They're retired. And so they will go and venture and share the experience. And hopefully they will be tweeting out, as they said, and I will be following them on Twitter and I'll be catching the news on the inauguration. But it's interesting just where the media is today and how they can skew it one way and look at that as a popularity contest of why attendance is down. But I thought I would just take the opportunity to say I was invited, but I got to work. And if we want to make America great again, it's going to take a lot of work. So thanks for being part of the program. We try to pull it all back to you because your life and your wealth is what's important. And if you can live a better life, then that's wonderful for everybody. And that will make our country the best we can be. Thanks so much for being part of the program. Please like us on Facebook, facebook.com/CFNplan. Vince, I have to put that commemorative. Why don't I put the invitation up on our Facebook page so people can see what an inauguration invite looks like.
Yeah, I want to see what that looks like.
Yeah. And then you can also, please, send me an email, info@CFNplan.com. Thank you for being part of the program. Have a great week.
Thanks for joining us on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. All of our shows are reproduced as podcasts and can be listened to on demand at your convenience. If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cordasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com or call our office at 215-558-3500. We hope you'll join us again next time on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.